Joining me in Studio C, Rufus Wainwright.
Hello.
Welcome to JPR.
Thank you.
Your entire family is musical.
Yes.
It's kind of an amazing array of performers. Your dad, your mom, your aunt, a couple of your sisters.
Yeah.
Did you start off as a little kid playing music? Because you were certainly engulfed by it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I grew up mostly with my mother and her family up
and your
in
mother
Canada. My mother was Kate McGarrigle, the great from the great duo Kate and Anna McGarrigle. Anna's still with us, so I was mostly up in Canada with them in Quebec. And yes, it was traditionally de rigueur to sing a lot and perform and, you know, learn an instrument. But that wasn't even, I mean, they were professional musicians, but it was more of a kind of just a general kind of a skill that was passed down for God knows how long. It was, the French Canadians are particularly musical. Mm. So I kind of hooked into that there.
So you were born in the States, but essentially raised in Canada.
Yes.
And in Eastern Canada, especially with your mom and aunt being in the folk tradition,
yeah.
Was the folk music both English folk and also in French?
Well, we knew a lot of, I learned a lot of French folk music in school and at home. My mother's family, her father was Irish, McGarrigle, so that hooked in there. And, you know, I guess with my, when you bring in my father's side, the Wainwright, and he was, he kind of grew up in more of a typical 50s American New York life, and you know, with Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and all those people, but I think both my parents in the late 60s and early 70s, around the time when Martha and I were born, they were part of a very strong and current and popular movement of folk, you know, whether stemming from Bob Dylan and Joan Baez or moving, you know, or Pete Seeger and all that. So they were part of that school, shall we say.
I mean, you and I are roughly the same age, and I remember at the time being stuck in the back seat of cars on road trips with a steady stream of Boston and the Eagles and Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Did you have that?
We had a little bit of that, but it was more, you know, field recordings from the American, you know, Library of Congress and Pete
like
Seeger.
Alan Lomax stuff,
right? Yeah, or, you know, Bahamanian singing or shape music. I mean, no, it was pretty weird, actually.
So you were obviously playing music from an early age. Was there a point at which you decided that this is what you wanted to do and pursue?
Well, it was very obvious from an early age that I was going to be on the stage in some capacity. I was, first of all, because I was completely useless at school from a very early age. Both my sister and I, in fact, my sister failed out of kindergarten, which is...
How do you do that?
She just wouldn't wake up in the morning. Oh. but we were good at night. So it was very obvious, and I think my mom noticed that, and being in the music business herself, though she was quite a scholar. I mean, she had a degree in science from McGill, and music was really a hobby for her that became a career. But having gone through that career, she noticed that she knew that it was hard and that we'd need to work extra diligently, and she made that possible.
Did you ever do the band thing, like the high school band?
I never really had a band, no. Yeah.
It was just always yours?
It was, yeah, it was me. I mean, for me, it was, I just loved being at the piano a lot and zoning out.
What do you want to play first today?
Well, to the title track of the new record, new album, called Out of the Game. I'm out of the game. I've been out for a long time now. I'm looking for something that can't be found on the main drag. No, I'm out of the game. I've been out for a long time now. I'm looking for
something that can't be found on the main drag. No, look at you, look at you, look at you, look at you, suckers. Does your mama know what you're doing? Look at you, look at you, look at you, look at you, suckers. Does your mama know what to do with your only child? With the mind of a senile man, you're only a young thing about to sleep with a sea of men just hanging around, wearing something from God knows where, just having a ball, making all of the thin cards fall. Look at you, look at you, look at you, look at you, suckers. Does your mama know what you're doing? Look at you, look at you, look at you, look at you, suckers. Does your mama know what you're doing? Da, 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 da. Time before you go out there and ruin all of the world once mine. I'm out of the game. I've been out for a long time now. I'm looking for something that can't be found on the main track. No, look at you, look at you, look at you, look at you, suckers. Does your mama know what you're doing? Look at you, look at you, look at you, look at you, suckers. Does your mama know what you doing?
That is Rufus Wainwright live on Open Air here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio, also streaming online at www.ijpr.org. Rufus, a number of years ago, around the time that you released the diptych, I guess, Want Yes. One, Want Two, your music was transitioning from singer-songwriter into a much more theatrical, multi-layered kind of sound.
Right.
And also around that time, you ended up in contact with Peter Gelb,
right,
the executive director of the Metropolitan Opera.
Yeah.
And you were sort of indirectly commissioned. There was sort of a...
Well, I was commissioned.
Yeah. There was
there was a program that I think still exists, I'm not sure, at Lincoln Center, basically, to do something, to write an opera.
Not something, it was to write an opera.
Well, I wanted to write an opera. I think they were more under the impression that it would be, that at a certain point through workshops and, you know, their expertise, opinions, it would either be an opera or a musical. I wanted to write an opera off the bat.
Did you have sufficient classical training to,
yeah,
to do
mean,
that?
Yeah, I mean, I studied piano from the time I was, six, and then I did go to McGill and music. But I became a huge opera fanatic at around 13, 14, and it's really all I listen to still. I mean, I still I try to branch out more. And I did have some other artists that I'm very influenced by, but mainly it's opera. So I that's sort of was my world for a long time.
But there's a big difference from listening to opera and enjoying opera and being able to orchestrate for full orchestra and a cast on stage.
There's not that much of a difference, really. I mean, I think you know, if you have a vision and you have a kind of and dedication and you and you have a good work ethic, you can do anything you know you want to do. And I just sort of had this operatic dream that. That was able to be fulfilled, and then I'm, you know, I've been commissioned to write another one, so that's great, and then I was, you know, I've written a few other pieces. I mean, I think, you know, I think one of the things that's missing, and in especially the opera world with composition, is that it should really be more of a kind of creature of invention, you know, or a creature of necessity, meaning that. That you have to write what people really need. so I just felt the need that I could. I felt the draw that I could offer that, you know, to especially singers, because I'm a singer myself, so I know how that feels.
The opera ended up not being debuted though by the Met.
Yeah, no, it was at the New York City Opera. It was debuted in England, in Manchester, and then it went to London, and then it went to Toronto, and then it was at the New York City Opera, and then there's some other European houses which are going to pick it up, which is pretty good for a first opera.
Are you happy with how it turned out?
Very happy. Yeah. I couldn't have been happier. I mean, I, you know, being a true opera fan and knowing a lot about the history of the form, you know, it's not till your third or fourth opera that you really kind of get into a certain groove, or if your first opera is incredible and, you know, unmatched, that to me is like a bit of a curse. So I felt very confident in what I offered at first with Prima Donna, because it's one thing, it's very stageable, it's very musical, people love it, but it is also my first piece, and I think it shows a lot of room for development, and so I'm excited about it.
Rufus Wainwright is my guest live in the JPR studios. His new album is called Out of the Game. You have talked about how some of the music of that era, the Want One, Want Two, when you were out touring, was perhaps not the most financially sound career decision.
Right.
Was that just because of the number of forces that you had to take out on the road?
No, I mean, there's no...
Because it was critically acclaimed.
Oh, yeah, no, it was critically acclaimed, and it did very well in England, and it was, you know... Actually, my first album did very, very well in the United States. Rufus Wainwright, that album. But, you know, the whole, you know, when I first got signed to DreamWorks Records in the mid-90s, I was told that it was, you know, the party was over and everything had collapsed and there was no more opportunities to, you know, have this kind of rock and roll existence and lifestyle and most notably paycheck. But it's been getting worse ever since. I mean, even that in retrospect was kind of a high point, you know, because that was right after Nirvana and, you know, the Smashing Pumpkins, you know, so there was still money being made. But everybody, I guess, sort of thought that it wouldn't be, I don't know, there was no way of going back to like the 70s or something, but it's steadily gotten worse. But for me, it's actually been kind of a good thing, because in the end of the day, you know, my albums are about music and they are about songs and they do last really well, and people kind of keep returning to them and they want to hear the material. So I just, you know, banked on the product.
Well, the new album is definitely a little different. I want to talk about that here in a minute, but let's hear another tune. What do you want to do next?
It's a song called Jericho from the new album. Here we go. Keep thinking that you were going to change. I keep thinking that you were going to rearrange. But I'm a fool to think something so impossible you were.
change. You ain't ever gonna change. Oh no, Jericho, until I blow. I keep thinking that you're going to rise. I keep thinking that you're going to compromise, but I'm a fool to think something so improbable. You ain't ever gonna rise. You ain't ever gonna rise. Oh no, Jericho, until I take surprise. Baby, I know that you're too sad to cry, and my little darling, guess what, so am I. Still I believe we are too shattered here. The open-hearted have no thing to fear. But I don't even think you hear me at all. Under your medieval ceiling, behind your biblical wall, guess I'll have to put my trumpet back in the case. Get behind this here cannon covered in lies. Covered in lies. I keep thinking that you're going to change. I keep thinking that you're going to rewrite. But I'm a fool to think something so impossible. You ain't never gonna change. You ain't never gonna change. Oh no, Jericho, until I blow, yeah, until.
I'll wait for that one.
That is Rufus Wainwright live on Open Air here on Jefferson Public Radio's Rhythm and News Service. We're also streaming online at ijpr.org. Rufus, the new album, Out of the Game, is described by many, including you, as perhaps the most pop-oriented album that you have released. Was that a conscious decision going in, or were those just the songs that
My definition of pop is really something you can play at a party, and it won't clear the room. I made a couple of albums like that. Alongside radio-friendly tunes, I also like to completely depress people and drag them into the mud.
In a beautiful way.
But this one, I attempted to make it, you know, just have a general level of boisterous energy. You know, mainly because the album right before, Songs for Lulu, All Days Are Nights, Songs for Lulu, that was just me alone at the piano, really processing my mother's death. And I went wholeheartedly into that dark endeavor. So at the other end, I just needed a break, and I needed to have some fun and embrace life. And so I got my friend Mark Ronson to produce it, and we had a blast.
Hmm. Does the title mean anything specific?
Out of the Game. Well, it's very, I don't know. It's me ruining my career once again. Meaning, because Out of the Game was the title track also of the single, the first single we released, and at the time I thought, you know, this kind of little tongue in cheek gesture of, you know, being out of the game but also in the game at the same time, because I'm using, you know, this pop producer and I'm, you know, writing up tempo songs,
right,
would be sort of like
radio friendly.
Yeah, would sort of, you know, crack a little smile from, you know, the general public. But of course, they just thought I was giving up. And
little did they know that you
were.
Yeah,
there's no irony in the way things work in the market economy. So I think people took it literally, that this was, you know, the end of my career.
But at the same time, you're holed up writing sketches on a new opera.
Yeah, no, I'm writing a new opera. Well, that's really going to help my pop career, another opera. I guess the idea with the title was that it was, you know, I'm looking for something more than the silly game, like something deeper, but also I am from the game. You know, I come out of this game. It's also, you know, I was married recently to my husband.
Congratulations.
Jorn, in New York. And so that's sort of, there's a romantic, element as well, or a non-romantic element, I should say. And just getting older, I just hit 40 the other
it's all downhill now.
That's actually really great.
You know, for a long while, almost every image of you online or videos of you was you at a piano.
Yeah.
And it seems like guitar started to make its way back into your music considerably more. Is that a practical decision because it's just easier to travel and a friendly, familiar instrument?
Well, I think they've tried to, especially early on, to kind of fuse me with the piano visually. And it makes sense. I mostly play piano and sing at the piano, and that's kind of where I go to. I've had my greatest successes. But that being said, I think in the meantime, I've taken so many different turns, whether it's the Judy Garland record or singing, you know, my mother's material, or, you know, doing the family shows, that is, and or doing an opera, that they don't really know how to. Once again, they're confused of how to do this, and you know, and I've played the guitar the whole time throughout my entire career, but I think I gravitated more towards the piano because it was my mother's instrument, and my father was. Though my mother was a fantastic guitar player, incredible, maybe even better than my dad. Sorry, I mean technically, but my dad is a brilliant guitar player and is a real kind of monster when it comes to strumming it and stuff. So I was a bit afraid of the guitar.
Speaking of new albums, there's another relatively new album that has come out that you play a role on. The tribute to your mom.
Yes, yes.
That is a fantastic family affair.
Album. Yeah, right? It's an album that Martha and I made with our family and also incredible guests like Nora Jones and Emmylou Harris and Jimmy Fallon and Anthony, all these people. And it's all my mother's material.
And it's, you guys have been doing the songs. Family concerts.
We did a series of tributes to her to raise money for the Kate McGarrigle Foundation, which raises money for sarcoma. And in fact, $9 of each album of Sing Me the Songs, it's called, goes to cancer research. So it's a good cause, and it's an incredible album.
What occupies your time outside of music? Is there much time outside of music for you?
Well, I mean, I have been working a lot in the theater now in terms of writing music for the theater, whether it's opera or musicals or film. I think drama is edging its way in, obviously, and I don't just mean the drama of my life. I mean, you know, setting up, you know, structures for the people to enjoy, and so that's good. I'm also, you know, my marriage is important, and I do have a child, and I want to be a good dad, and I do, and I have to say also, I mean, you know, hitting 40, you want to look 30 for the rest of your life. So you have to start to, you know, take care of yourself.
You once said that before singing, you'd rather paint or draw or maybe do something in the visual arts, especially since they're quiet.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
Well, there's just something so bombastic and relentless about being in the music business. You know, whether it's doing shows or being in the studio, I mean, you're constantly using your ears. And there is something with painting And I did actually go to art school as well in Canada. That is, you know, utterly engrossing because it is, you know, the polar opposite of sound. And also you can listen to other people's music, and it's not about you know, you're not analyzing it as much. You're just sort of being inspired, which sometimes you forget to do in the music business.
Rufus Wainwright is my guest live on Open Air here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio. The new album is called Out of the Game. Do we have time for one more tune?
Yeah.
What do you want to play?
Yeah, I'm going to do an a cappella song, meaning no instrument. But this is called Candles. And, yeah. I try to do all that I can, but the churches have run out of candles. I tried to give you all I own, but the bankers have run out of loaners. It's always just that little bit more that doesn't get you what you're looking for. I tried to block the cabin door, but the churches have run out of candles. I tried to lend a helping hand, but the rooms have all run out of pamphlets. I tried to cook it up in there, the kitchen is run out of candy bits. It's always just that little bit more that doesn't get you what you're looking for. I tried a banging on the cabin floor, but the churches have run out of candles. Then one day in the cathedral, I finally lent you a candle. And all along the vaulted halls, the virgins did smile from their mantles. It's always just that little bit more that doesn't get you what you're looking for, but gets you where you need to go. But the church is every candles.
That is Rufus Wainwright live on Open Air here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio, streaming online at ijpr.org. The new album is called Out of the Game. Rufus Wainwright, thank you so much for dropping by and visiting with us. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.